Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And I suggest you shut up and show more football.
Come on, come on. Figure. We've done that thing. Can we not knock it?
I am flabbergasted. I wouldn't even let him on the bus after the match. I get a taxi back to Manchester.
Again, please don't call me arrogant, because what I'm saying is true. I think I'm a special one.
When the seagulls follow the trawler, it's because they think sardines will be thrown into the sea. Thank you.
I understand what I'm trying to get at. Yes, he was a great player. Yes, he was a wonderful leader. But he wasn't a magician.
Well, take a bow, son. I mean that. Take a bow.
I'm Richard Keys.
Oh, sorry. I wasn't paying attention, Richard.
Ready?
All right. Do I start again?
No.
Okay. Well, I am Andrew Gray.
Great.
Okay.
And there is no Nigel de Jong.
No, not at all.
No.
Where is he?
No.
I know. No, it's like, I've had a good start today.
I've been discombobulated by the news that Little Mix have broken up.
You're joking?
No. It was like hearing that Elvis had died again.
Was it really?
I was in pieces this morning.
Were you a big Little Mix fan, were you, fella?
Not really.
No.
But it seems to have made headlines everywhere.
And, well, and it would do. You're too old to worry about Little Mix.
Yeah.
You've got to get down with the kids.
Yeah. I mean, really. What a way for the day to start.
Yeah.
When that popped up this morning.
Not good.
Terrible. Anyway, Nigel's not with us. He's elsewhere in the world.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we could say too much about his actual location, really.
No.
He's elsewhere in the world pursuing a new career.
Yes. Yes.
That's fair to say.
Yes, and we wish him well.
We do wish him well, but we also wish he was here.
Yes.
A little more often.
Yes.
And when he does turn up, he's pissed.
Yes. You won last week, that's for sure.
This is Keys and Gray, the podcast. You can follow us, of course, on Insta and Twitter at Keys and Gray Pod. There we are. Now, I thought this week we'd be a little more serious than perhaps we have in previous episodes. There are three football clubs that you look at. Well, there are four, really, if you include Manchester United. But they've at least taken a step to address their issues. And Ralph Rangnick talking Friday morning through a spanner in the works when he said, I might recommend to the board that I stay on.
I thought he'd already agreed to have a two-year deal after he's finished.
Well, he's there for 6.5 months as interim manager.
Yeah, yeah.
But if things go well,
uh-huh,
he's decided that he might recommend that he stays on.
Do you not think Manchester United, through all the indecision that they've had, through all the uncertainty of recent months, would like something more certain than I might do this and I may do that?
Well, I don't think they've got anything certain at the moment. And if it goes well, it's the same question I think everybody's asked, in fairness, about this interim appointment. Mm. It might go very well.
Yeah, it might.
And then it might be the right thing to say carry on. But it can't be based on the hysteria of a penalty that they shouldn't have had in a Champions League game. because from day one, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer was not the right man to manage Manchester United. And ultimately, that view will be proven to be correct by the amount of interest there is in him elsewhere now.
Yeah.
Who is going to appoint Solskjaer as their next manager?
A bit interesting one. Very.
The answer is...
Not many.
Nobody.
No.
Really, at the highest level.
What if Rangnick comes in and has the Tuchel effect on Manchester United?
Then,
what if he took them to the Champions League final and they won it?
Then you would have to say his application for the job is irresistible.
Sealed.
Yeah. Yeah. So in some ways you can argue that perhaps Manchester United have been quite smart. Because Tuchel didn't get the job initially, did he?
Didn't he?
He was only there originally on a very short-term deal, was renewed after the Champions League. Let's not forget that Ranić also turned that opportunity down, saying that he didn't think he could have an impact in four months. Well, now he's got to have an impact in...
6 months. Yeah. 6.5 months.
Perhaps he's also learned a lesson that when these big clubs come calling, you don't say no. That's why I would defend Solskjaer. He had to take it. He just should never have been offered it.
I mean, it's like David Moyes. We talk about David because he's a pal of ours as well, and we like David. He's also a very, very good manager, as he's proven yet again at West Ham. But you know what it's like? Taking over from a legend at a football club is a really difficult job to do. Mm. Being the first in after Ferguson, being the first in after Wenger, were always going to be difficult jobs, hugely difficult jobs. And I think that had David... had someone else gone in and then David Moyes gone in, I think David Moyes' United career might have been very different.
Or if Manchester United had been a little more understanding, I was hopeful that he would end his tenure there at the end of 10 months because he was getting beaten up so badly. I don't think he had any support from within the dressing room.
Probably
one or two very high-profile players turned their backs on him and others just ridiculed him, as we remember Hernandez doing. Shouting from the dugout, send him off when he got into trouble in the Champions League game.
Yeah.
So I don't think Moisey had a very fair crack at it.
No, he didn't.
At all. So we shall never know.
No.
What we do know is that he is a very good coach.
Yeah.
And he always has been
a
very good coach.
Well, 11 years at Everton showed that.
I also repeat what I said on beIN Sports the other night. It's important, I think, for English football to have a strong Manchester United.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we don't sit as fans do, hoping that that's not the case. Yeah. We want it to go well. So I wish Ranić well, and I wish Manchester United well, and I hope that they come out of this malaise that they've been in for a decade.
Well, they should. I mean, there's absolutely no reason when you look at the group of players that they've got there, Kesey, that they should be contesting major titles, both at home and abroad.
Oh, by the way, when Ranić talks about titles, I think there's a misunderstanding in the British press. Yeah, no, titles are cups.
Cups as well.
As well. Yeah. That's what Mourinho always talks about, titles.
Yes, yes.
And then we leap on them and go, oh, you said you'd win the title.
No. Nice. League Cup, FA Cup, titles. That's included.
Yeah, absolutely. Anyway, that wasn't really where I expected the conversation to go. So I was talking about Derby County, who are in meltdown. Great credit to Wayne Rooney for staying, although he continues to draw a huge salary from funds that they no longer have.
Mm-hmm.
I am of the opinion that perhaps were he to say, look, I'll just stay now until we get this sorted out and then someone please make a decision. But I can't justify any more earning the sort of money that I am out of the club. Or
I think he's quite financially secure enough to be able to do that.
I think he's in a position whereby that can be the case. Mm-hmm. So Craig Hope, sports reporter on the Daily Mail, for the North East. This is where it gets interesting for Newcastle fans.
North East, you're taking a chance here, aren't you?
Not at all. Quite happy to talk about it. Craig wrote a piece this week talking about how close Derby are actually to folding.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, that's interesting. He was due to join us last week, Craig. He was coming to Qatar for a pre-World Cup hunt around the area. And it would have been a hunt because he'd have been searching
for
all sorts.
He would have.
Unfortunately, COVID stop that happening. So I thought, why not bring Craig, who's right now, we're recording Friday morning, at a Eddie Howe press conference.
Okay.
He, more than anybody, knows what's happening or has happened at Newcastle United. So there's Derby Newcastle, which Craig can cover, and we shall talk with him shortly. But there's also Everton.
Mm-hmm.
A thoughtful and considered appraisal from you, please, on what's happening at Goodison.
Wow, where do you start at Goodison? First of all, what I would say is, like, the demise that's happened and the problems that Everton are in do not solely lie at the feet of Rafael Benitez. Okay?
Yes.
They don't. I've said for many years now, Richard, that I find it difficult to hammer the owners the way that lots of fans have, in respect to have the owners of the club put their hands in their pockets and have they given whoever it is, the coaches or Marcel Brands or
Steve Walsh,
have they said to them, yes, here's the money for the players you're recommending? Yes, they have.
I think that's a little unfair on Brands and Walsh.
Why?
Because I don't believe that they are solely responsible for the group of players that have arrived.
The responsibility to where Everton are with players is down to the managers and directors of football that they've had in, particularly for the last 5/6 years, because money has been there, money has been spent. Over 20 players, 20 in the last 5 years have cost Everton 20 million plus. 20.
You see, if I didn't know better, the owner is Russian.
Yes. Yeah.
He spent a lot of money.
Yes.
It's a sort of formula that has happened elsewhere in the Premier League. Why?
Well, hopefully because he wanted Everton to be successful, didn't he? Why are you laughing like that? People can't see you. Why?
That would be a lovely thing to believe.
Well, hold on. It's what every Evertonian believed when he took over the club.
Of course.
Including myself. That this was great at last. Proper money to invest. Proper money to invest in players that can take Everton back to where I and all Evertonians believe should be at least in the top six of the league every year.
Yes. Yes. Okay.
All right. So... No. We were disillusioned, were we?
No, not
stupid,
I just,
naive.
I think you do what football fans do. You believe in what you're presented with. Why have Everton spent so much money on so many ordinary players? And the owner now, in my view, and I say that with some authority because I do know an individual in this part of the world who's been offered the club.
Really?
And the deal broke
Hold
down.
On, you've just told me that. That's just happened just 10 seconds ago, you tell me that.
No. the problem was that as well as purchasing for 500 mil, he had to put another 500 mil down to finish the stadium.
Yeah, yeah.
Usmanov has lost interest, in my view. Mashiri is not the man with the money.
No, he's not.
He's the man that...
I think we know that.
...steers the club.
Mm-hmm.
Bill Kenwright has lost total control. Was very much against the appointment of Benitez. Now, I agree with you. All of this cannot be placed at the door of Rafael Benitez.
No, it can't.
But in appointing Benitez, they only made matters worse for themselves.
Yes, they did.
And this sore will not heal until somebody relieves him of his post.
Richard, the appointment of Benitez divided a fan base. I'm not saying that everyone felt like me. And let me state again... My reasons for not wanting Benitez were not wholly that he'd managed Liverpool, he'd called Everton a little club and this, that and the other. No, they weren't. My main reason was that Rafael Benitez in the last 5 or 6 years of his managerial career, since he left Liverpool basically, has been sliding. He's been getting older. He's in his 60s. Everton tried a 60-year-old with a great reputation last time out in Carlo Ancelotti, and it didn't work, right? And
well...
It didn't work. Well, it didn't work. It didn't work the way they wanted.
Well, I'm not sure. I think it depends. Did he have them competitive for a while? Yes.
Yes.
Did he win a derby match, which was the dream of a generation that hadn't seen that happen?
Yes.
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 I think he did okay.
He did okay, but
with what he had.
It wasn't spectacular. But what I'm saying is, when Rafa Benitez's name was thrown up, I'm thinking, no, we can't do that because Rafa's at the end of his managerial career, not the beginning. Not the beginning. So that was the main reason why I didn't want Rafael Benitez. Plus the fact that having watched his football at Newcastle for how many years he was there, I didn't want to see that at Everton. Pragmatic, defensive, everyone behind the ball, just playing counter-attack football every now and again. No.
You see, it's a grand old club to play for. And the end of that opening verse is, we play beautiful football.
Yeah.
Well,
we don't.
You don't anymore.
We don't, and we never would have done it. We never will do, I don't think, under Rafael Benitez.
Absolutely not.
So that was the reason I didn't want him there. Kind of come, and you know, partly was because of Everton. But let me tell you something about ex-Liverpool. Do you know if Everton had sort of gone up and said to Steven Gerrard at Rangers, when he was at Rangers, we want Steven Gerrard to come and manage, and Steven Gerrard went, yeah, I want to do that.
He's an Evertonian.
Well, what I'm saying is, Richard, I would have liked that. I would have been all behind that because Steven Gerrard's at the beginning of his managerial career and he's young and he's ambitious and he's all those things that you want in a coach. I would have been supportive of Steven Gerrard getting the Everton job
way before
Rafa Benitez.
By the way, the last 60-year-old that Everton had that might have taken the club, not in the direction I don't think he was ever going to achieve making them as competitive as your team were.
No.
But they pulled the rug out from under Sam and gave it to Marco Silva.
Yeah,
another catastrophic mistake.
Yeah. Well, Sam was never accepted, was he really? from day one.
Well, he's never been accepted anywhere. And yet, what job has he not done?
No, I know.
Other than the one
and
at West Brom.
And he had Everton eighth.
Eighth.
He had Everton eighth. I know. So that's my reasons for not wanting Rafa Benitez. But if we go into the plight of the club right now, or the playing of what we saw the other day, is Rafa Benitez responsible for setting up tactics? Yes. Is he responsible for picking a team? Yes. Is he responsible for dictating? As we've heard from Ranić, the job of a coach is to put your... We did it on our show at BeIN Sports yesterday. The job of a coach is to put your thoughts, your ideas into the players and make them believe. Well, I'm sorry. I don't know what Rafa's thoughts and philosophy is.
Is he in charge of substitutions? If you've got ordinary, ageing centre-forward that should never have signed for the football club, injured, you've got another that cost you 20 million quid who can't be any worse than the one that's coming off, why not just put one on for one? Why start to try to get clever in order to create more confusion, I think, amongst the players rather than find a solution to what was happening the other night?
No, I mean, it took off to Demarai Gray when the game was probably done. And maybe he did that for a reason, I don't know, just to protect him a bit for the next game that's coming up. I don't know. But you're talking about Rondon coming off and not putting on Cech Tosun.
Yeah.
Who is a front man, although he hasn't contributed much to Everton over the years. But I know what you're saying, one for one, it would have seemed it. But he tried to switch things up and put Decore as a number 10 or just off the front and play like that. And it never worked. And it was a bad night.
Anyway, all I was going
to say to you is, do I believe another coach could get a better tune out of Everton? Absolutely, I do. Yes. Absolutely, I do.
The straw to cling to is that history often repeats itself. I remember watching Everton in front of 12,000 at different times. I also remember Dave Kidd in the Mirror today reminded me that the age-old protest at Goodison used to be in the big main stand there.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They used to have cushions on the seats.
Did they?
And when they didn't like what they were seeing, they used to throw the cushions.
No, a bit like the white hankies at Madrid.
Yes. So Bob Latchford, I was there. Wow. I remember seeing Bob pick one up and throwing it back.
It was that bad. I didn't realise that.
They don't have the cushions anymore, so that protest is not available to them.
No.
But from that era, I'd left and I'd gone to Manchester mm-hmm. by that time, but Howard created the very best team that Everton had ever seen.
Mm.
And I say that with some confidence, despite the fact that Ball, Harvey and Kendall were not in it.
No, I know.
But the Holy Trinity. But that was the most successful team in Everton's history. And it came from a period like this.
Yes,
so
it did.
Maybe.
No,
maybe.
But again, I go back to what I was saying to you. I go back, that was a team driven by a young, vibrant Howard Kendall, a young, vibrant Colin Harvey, who all had massive ambitions, who were Evertonians, who knew the club, who loved the club, who breathed the club, who wanted success for the club beyond anything else. That was driven by those two to do that at a young age, not by a 60-plus manager who's had, in my opinion, has had his best days. I'm sorry, but he's had his best days. Is Rafa Benitez going to take Everton where I think we should be? No, he's not, in my opinion. I hope I'm wrong, Keezy. And let me state that right now. Nothing would give me greater satisfaction than to be sitting with you at the end of this season when Everton have clawed their way back into the top six in this league and are beginning to show a little bit of what we think Everton are about. But I don't think it's going to happen.
No, I think he's been hampered by a shocking list of injuries, hasn't he?
Do you know what? I was reading today, again, about the awful injury list that they've had. And yes, one thing I hate is I hate coaches that blame injuries. You never hear the top coach blame an injury. Not really. Not really. I read today that, you know, when Yerry Mina started the games at the beginning of the season, but they conceded 1.18 goals. And after Mina's injury, it was like 1.8. Funnily enough, I would expect us to have quite a good record against Norwich, Burnley, Brighton, who can't score goals, as we've seen, and was the one other.
Southampton.
And Southampton, who were having a shocking time. I would expect the defence to play quite well against them. But when they start throwing in the better teams, the bigger teams, do you think Yerry Mina would have stopped them scoring? Do you think Yerry Mina would have stopped Watford smashing in five against us at Goodison? No, he wouldn't.
Not sure he would get in. I don't know. Well, I mean,
is he any better than Godfrey and Keane?
No.
Probably not, in my
opinion.
They
have had Calvert-Lewin injured.
Yeah, I get that. That's a miss. Now, you can't deny that
they
for
talk
Everton.
They talk about Decore being another one of the long-term injuries.
I was curious about that. They said Decore's been a long-term. Abdoulaye Doucouré started 10 or 14 league games. Started. So he's missed four games. That's all. So we can't say he's been out for a long time. He's a long injury list. The one that's been missing, anyone would miss the centre-forward. Anyone would.
Who Arsenal would quite like to take.
Yeah, I saw that today. In January. Not happy with that. Well, of course he will, because he's a good young player, really good young player who might get very, very good, you know, if he continues to improve the way he has. And Everton can't afford to lose Dominic Calvert-Lewin. But would Dominic been able to have bridged the gap that we've seen? Would Dominic Calvert-Lewin been able to have done anything against Liverpool in midweek?
That might have scored, might have kept it livelier for longer than the 10 minutes, 15 minutes.
Could he have done more against getting hammered 5-2 against Watford at home?
Probably not.
I mean, even if he gets a couple, we can beat 5-4.
Front to back. But
what I'm saying is, it's wrong to blame an injury.
You see, where I think that Benitez got really unlucky is that he took a job he'd coveted for a long time and tried like a bear to get. And if he'd just waited 3 months...
Oh, you're saying he might have got Newcastle?
He'd have walked back to Newcastle, which is the one he really wanted.
Maybe Craig Hope will have a view on
well,
that.
Well, this is what I'm interested in talking to Craig, because he will know. I could be totally wrong about that.
Yeah.
I think that's the one place he would be welcomed back there like the Messiah, in my view.
So the thing about Everton is, no, Everton's in a terrible place. The atmosphere in midweek was shocking. I heard many ex-Evertonian players, Everton players who are there talking about being toxic. That's a really big word to be using when you're talking about Everton. I mean, I'm kind of guessing even when we were struggling with Howard and avoiding relegation that one season, it wasn't a toxic environment they were playing in.
Well, it wasn't, because there was nobody there.
Well, it was about 12,000 there. But it wasn't toxic.
I remember seeing Howard trolleying that big backside of his up and down the right-hand side, and Reedy couldn't get in. It was a terrible time for the club, even further down,
even nearer now when Howard went back for the third time and had that brush with relegation. Remember, was it the last day?
We should have put you down.
That was the last
day.
Sure?
There were two. Wimbledon, which was...
What do you mean, what?
Well, I mean...
Some tremendous goals that
fantastic
day.
Fantastic comeback from two down.
Yeah, it was brilliant. Yeah. Well, that's it. But I never got the impression it was toxic that year. Yeah,
a lot of predictions on Everton actually winning that 3-2 as well, there were.
Was it?
And Coventry went there and Farrelly stuck one in the top. Oh, no, we didn't get beat.
Oh, you drew?
When Dion scored.
That's right.
You were panicking for your
I was panicking a wee bit because I was doing that game. And Farrelly smashed one in the top corner. I remember that
And
goal.
I can tell you that Strack was determined. He wanted a result.
He?
Yes.
Oh
yes.
Until I see him.
I'd spoken to Strack before that. And
he
was very keen to get a result. I can tell you that.
That's only because we used to gub him when he was at Manchester United.
Maybe. But you didn't gub us at Highfield Road.
We listed half our team.
Oh, get for off. The cup every, final. Year, well, every year.
For the cup final, we rested half
Willie Carr, team. Hunt, Andy, it's behind you. No need to dive for that, son. There's a perfectly good net behind you. Don't worry about that.
Was that you? That against Everton, that goal?
Yes, Andy Rankin in goal, Brian LeBone and the rest of the boys. It's behind you, lads. Don't worry.
Anyway, so it's not good to see my team, my club, the way they are. Where they are.
Okay, well, that's a very, as I said, we needed a thoughtful conversation about Everton. Let's turn our attention now to two other of the strugglers. Derby County with their 1 point after two deductions during the course of this season. And the mess. By the way, and I'll talk to Craig about this as well.
Yeah.
I wonder what an independent football administrator would have done about saying to Mel Morris, sorry, you can't have the club because it might end up in a bit of a mess. Local businessman. Worth a fortune, the right sort. You know, how would an independent football regulator have avoided the mess that Derby are in? It wouldn't. That's why it's a daft idea. Would an independent regulator have had anything more to say about the takeover at Newcastle United? No, because this British government wanted Saudi money at Newcastle.
Yeah.
So
you're not for an independent
absolutely
governance
not.
Of nor am I actually, but I wouldn't know what it is. But
nonsense. It's nonsense.
Who's that? Who's hiding up? Tracy Crouch
Tracy
or something?
Crouch. And
assorted others.
The usual others.
Okay.
Let's talk to Craig Hope. Craig, North East correspondent for the Daily Mail.
Daily Mail?
Yes. Joins us. How are you, my friend?
Very good, guys. Very good. Although I think it's important, I should say that in better times, in a COVID-free world, I would have been sat with you guys now having a beer, recording this podcast, because the plan was for me to be in Qatar this week,
doing some
World Cup stuff 1 year out, and I think us guys were gonna meet for a beer, weren't we, and record this. But as it stands, I'm currently on Tyneside. Well, I'm looking out my kitchen window, and we've got the barbecue covered.
Excellent.
The cover is being blown about violently in the wind.
Oh, yes.
It's about -1 degree. It's damp. It's windy. So, I mean, all things considered, it's quite a nice day. On
Lovely day,
right?
I would say, then.
Well,
I wish I was there with you guys.
Well, first of all, so do we. That, as you say, was the plan. I wouldn't say it's blowing a gale, Andy.
No.
It's a little breezy.
It's a little
nippy. But, yeah.
It's 27 degrees here.
Is it?
With not a cloud in the sky. So it's a bit nippy today, Craig. So.
I might get a jumper for later. Yeah. Craig, you work on a patch that Jeff Shreves, former colleague of ours, always said, if I had my choice, if I wasn't doing this job, which he's done very well for a long time, tunnel reporter, I would love to work in the Northeast. Is it as much fun as Shreves, he thinks?
Listen, we say that, and it's for all the wrong reasons to a degree, because it's absolutely bonkers. And this is a football club which puts itself on the back pages of the newspapers continually, but never for footballing reasons. rarely for anything that happens on the pitch. But that is why, guys, that is why we've still got a thriving patch up here. You look at other patches around the country which have fallen away to a degree, but every national newspaper has got a guy in the Northeast because of everything I described, whether it's, listen, sadly, the arrival of Eddie Howe in terms of news that there's no training ground fights anymore. I'm devastated. I'm absolutely good. Eddie Howe's coming in for 3 weeks. Everybody likes each other. It's all settled down. What's going on? I'm not used to this. All the moles are hibernating. Come on.
Pards wasn't very happy. When Pards was up there, Craig, he wasn't very happy with me when I reported a fridge had gone across. gone across the kitchen at the training ground.
No, that won't happen under Eddie. That won't happen because Eddie will manage holistically. You have to get used to that.
Let's park Newcastle for a minute, because you strayed this week into territory that I'm also fascinated about. Derby County. What on earth is happening there?
Well, you've got a situation whereby if any buyer comes in now, as it stands, they are inheriting an amount of debt which vastly outweighs the value of the football club. Now, that makes no business sense to accept to take on at least £60 million worth of debt and more for a club which is in the Championship with a fair wind in the Championship is worth 35 to 40. In League One, 20 to 25, like I say, with a fair wind. So why is anybody going to pay more than that? Now, the situation you've got is whereby a change in the law means that HMRC, the tax man, is the preferred creditor, and they have to be satisfied first in terms of their debt for any new owner coming in. Now, their debt currently stands at £29.3 million, I believe it is. Now, I've spoken to some of those who have seen the books, who are attached to would-be investors, and they say, unless HMRC, they're talking about quartering the bill, cutting 75% of their bill down to around £7.5 million, then there is no way this deal can make any sense. Now, that is HMRC in isolation. You've then got a £20 million loan to MSD that they argue as well. MSD will have to accept they've made a bad loan and accept a couple of million pounds on this. You cannot at the moment make any logical sense for buying Derby County. The problem they've got with HMRC is, if HMRC do agree with the administrators to cut their debt in order to facilitate the sale, that then sets a very dangerous legal precedent in terms of every other football club in the land, and I believe there are 20, 25 in the AFL who have outstanding HMRC bills. They can then say, well, how about, why don't we go into administration?
Yeah.
If we're going to lose 75% of what we owe you, it's probably worth a 12-point deduction.
It's great. Funny enough,
I was going to say to Craig, why don't they just go into administration?
Well, that's why I think, sorry, Craig, I thought Derby was smart when they did, because they knew they were going to get done 9 points for financial irregularities. So just get on with it.
What about liquidating the company? Is that a feasible option?
Okay, well listen, I mean, so see, you've got Derby on administration at the moment, and the administrators are in there, and the administrators are being very positive in that they're making all the right noises. They're saying they've got people who are interested in buying the club and they're confident the deal will be done. Now, the guys I've spoken to have said that the optimism of the administrators is not reflective of reality, really, and those closer to the situation believe that unless the HMRC agree to cut this debt, then there is every chance that the club will be liquidated and will be faced with the, you know, one of the greatest, most storied clubs in the land going out of business, which cannot and should not be allowed to happen.
What does that mean, though, Craig?
Yeah. Tragedy.
I'm liquidated old enough to remember Middlesbrough doing that, and they were reborn within 48 yeah. hours. I mean, what happens if Derby are liquidated?
I was thinking, couldn't somebody pick it up, start again?
The club ceases to exist. They can't, Andy. They can start again, but they start again in whatever tier it is, 9, 10, I don't know which tier it is that would come in at. But Derby County, as we know it today, would cease to exist if the club is liquidated. They have to find a way to reduce the debt, and they have to find a buyer. Now, the guys I've spoken to are looking at this situation and saying liquidation is more likely than not as it stands at the moment, because they don't think the HMRC will cut a deal because of the dangerous precedent it sets. But, and this is the but, this is football. Football doesn't work to ordinary rules. There is always a chance in football that something will be done. You know, someone or something comes from left field. And also as well, the government don't want Derby County to go out of business. It's a community asset. But from what we're told, Boris Johnson wasn't particularly happy when Bury went to the boards a couple of years ago. I don't think they will want Derby to go. So my sources tell me the one body who can convene to bring all this together is the government. If they can get the Treasury, Mel Morris, Derby's owner, MSD, a prospective buyer, all in one room and thrash out a plan to save Derby County, then it is possible.
Do you know what I think we need, Craig? Moment, I think we need an independent regulator, and this would never have happened.
But listen, the situation there is grim. It's not very nice. Wayne Rooney spoke yesterday saying liquidation isn't an option now. I know he's probably sort of duty bound to say that to a degree, but the point of the story we wrote in midweek was just to highlight how bad some of those who are closer to it than any of us are believe this situation really is.
That would be tragic.
We wish them well, because it's a fabulous football club and deserves
would
better.
What would be the biggest that we've lost? Would that be Derby?
Have Rangers.
We lost? No, we never lost Rangers. Shut up. Get off. Don't listen to him, Craig. Derby would be the biggest,
Derby
wouldn't it?
Derby would be the biggest.
It must
Derby
be, yeah, when you think
we've
about
ever
it.
Lost. Yeah, yeah. It would be. Yeah.
Goodness. You know, would
former
be
First Division champions. So,
right, yeah. Here we go then. The elephant in the room. How bad are things at Newcastle United?
It depends what you mean by bad. Okay, so if we're talking in isolation of the league position and the situation they're in, very bad. But I'm going to tell you, on Tuesday night, I had this conversation with someone at the club this morning. Now, a 1-1 draw at Norwich should not be uplifting, but honestly, guys, to be in the stadium on Tuesday night, it strangely was. It was bizarre in many ways, because if you'd said to me going into the game on Tuesday, you're going to come out with this having drawn at home to Norwich, a game you have to win, yet feel encouraged and positive about Newcastle's prospects, you know, I would have thought you were mad, but we did. Listen, I think the sending off and the way the players responded had it played a part in that. But at the same time, guys, honestly, it was the first time in a long time I've been inside St James's, and you could feel the toxicity that's been present for so long had evaporated. This was, for once, everybody on the same page, supporters, players, management staff, everybody wanting the team to win and do well. And that hasn't been the case in recent times under Mike Ashley and Steve Bruce. And I left just thinking, you know what, no matter what happens, there is a sense of supporters having their football club back here. You could see that in terms of the effort of the players. There was a renewed energy, a renewed application, the response of the crowd to going a man down. Now, once over, I used that word a few weeks ago under Steve Bruce, that situation would have turned toxic, and I think Norwich would have run out winners, but they didn't. The rally behind Eddie, and I think the presence of new owners in Eddie Howe on the touchline has made all the difference in the short term. But to go back to the bigger picture, well, listen, it's not very good, is it? They haven't won in 14 now.
There's some tough games coming up, Craig, haven't you, as well?
And you took the words out of my mouth. Yeah. They've had a relatively easy start. The elephant in the room is the fact that they've had their easy games. They've got the tough games to come, and they've got Burnley at home tomorrow, which is absolutely must win. But after that, they've got a run of four, which is incredibly difficult. And the real difficulty they're finding at the moment, guys, is, and I think without a shadow of a doubt, they need reinforcements in January to strengthen that squad. They need to sign quality. They need to sign leadership. They need to make a signing like I think a Brian Kilcline type who Kevin brought in is his first sign in the 92. They've identified that. They need a real leader in there to drag them towards survival. The problem they're finding is players at the moment are non-committal. those top targets are saying, come back to me in January.
Of course, let's see if you're absolutely. I was just going to say to you, I mean, it's going to be the most difficult thing that Eddie Howe can do is to convince someone who's playing Premier League football in particular. I mean, if you're bringing players from the Championship, and I'm sure that that's not what Newcastle fans would be looking for, as Championship-type players coming in. But if you're trying to bring Premier League players in and they're sitting there thinking, hold on a minute, you're bottom of the league, I'm playing in the Premier League, might not be in the team all the time, but I'm actually in it, or I'm going to go to Newcastle and what? Drop down to the Championship? It's a hard sell.
It is. A lot of the conversations so far featured the term relegation release clause, or, you know, a loan with a view to a permanent, because nobody really wants to commit to a club that, as it stands, statistically, odds-wise, is probably going to be in the Championship next season. And this is why the word budget has never been discussed. So much is being made of how much are the Saudis going to splurge in January. Well, you've got to have a player available to buy to spend money. So at the moment, budget hasn't really come into it until they've actually got players saying, well, I'm willing to sign up to this project.
And the rest
at the
moment, of the league,
I think they're finding that difficult.
Craig, as you know very well, have ganged up and brought about this temporary ban on spending as far as the commercial activities are concerned.
Yeah.
Has anybody considered that if Newcastle were to be relegated, financial fair play regulations in the Championship are a whole lot more stringent? And as Reading, Derby, Sheffield Wednesday and a whole host of Bournemouth when they came up will tell you, if you break them, you're in trouble.
To a degree, but I think Newcastle, the one thing about inheriting a football club from Mike Ashley is you've got massive scope to spend, because he didn't. He's done all the cost cutting. So you come in terms of financial fair play, there's a hell of a lot of wiggle room, because the ship has been run so tightly under Mike Ashley's ownership. So I wouldn't have thought that was a concern in the short term. In any case as well, you go down for a year, you spend money, you get promoted again. It's no longer the EFL's concern. So I think relegation, they want to avoid relegation. And I think certainly in terms of Amanda Staveley and her husband, who have in effect been given the management contract in the short term to run this football club, they don't want relegation on their watch, because that then doesn't reflect well back in Riyadh. You know, they want to be part of this project going forward in terms of a hands-on role. So Amanda and her husband and the current British ownership, more than anyone, don't want relegation. But I think in the real longer-term grand scheme of things, in terms of the Saudis really are as committed as they say they are, then dropping into the Championship wouldn't be the disaster it would be for other clubs, because we'd expect them to come back straight away.
Yeah, that's also true.
That is true.
Eddie Howe, very popular choice at the moment, but had Geordie's had a blank sheet of paper and Rafa Benitez had been available, would he have been the one?
For the owners, undoubtedly would have been. If Rafa Benitez hadn't gone to Everton, the owners would have come in on the Thursday and Rafa Benitez would have been appointed on the Friday.
Why didn't you get a move on then and save my club? For God's sake, Craig. Come on. That timing shocking.
This sounds like a bizarre thing to say, bearing in mind we've had four bloody years of writing about this potential takeover. It actually took everyone by surprise. It came out of the blue and everyone was relatively unprepared. I think even the new owners weren't expecting to go through as quickly as it did. I mean, it was a Wednesday and I was sat at home. I was sat right where I am now in the kitchen. I got a call saying, this is happening. You want to be quick. You want to put something out now. This is hours away from being completed. I was seriously give over. Honestly, we've been here before. I'm not making a fool of myself. You then speak to one or two others and you think, hold on a minute, this really is happening. So I put something out on Twitter really quickly, just saying, you know, sources tell me this is happening this time. And from there, it gathered momentum and all of a sudden it became something which was very real. And I got a tip off that the guys were in the new owners were in the Jesmond Dean house. This hasn't been reported anywhere. I know there are journalists drawn to this as well, but it hadn't been reported. So the new owners were in Jesmond Dean house, which is a very nice spot. You guys probably know it's not far from
very
where
nice.
Very nice spot.
Yes.
Very I can't afford to go there. That's my problem.
We have to pay the bill these days. That's the difference.
So even at this point, I'm thinking that they might not be on Tyneside, you know. So I went down on the off chance that I thought, you know, I'll jump in the car and see where it takes me. But I just walked the dog. I've got baby stick on my shoulder from my newborn. And I jumped in the car. So I'm outside Jesmond Dean house. To my horror, I realised they're there. To my horror, I realised they're happy for me to go in. So I'm walking into Jesmond Dean house to meet the new owners of Newcastle. They realised I was there and they said, listen, you can come in, have a beer with us, but we're not here, you're not here. Slav walked in dressed as a dog owner with baby stick on my shoulder. Nice. And what a first impression to make.
Yeah,
so, but anyway, they were good as gold. They told me everything that was going to happen. They invited me back the next day. They said, listen, it's going to be announced tomorrow. You can come and work here. When it goes ahead, you can have an interview with Amanda out in a bed, in a street, which was great. But actually, on a little separate point, dress-wise, I massively overcompensated the next day. So I went back smarter than most people would dress for a wedding, to the point where I looked like a member of staff at Jesmond Dean House. People were asking me for drinks. At one point, a lady pulled up outside and thought I was the car valet. she almost handed me the keys to my car to go park it. That 24 hours, and you guys were probably following it from afar in Qatar. And I know you guys have got an opinion on this, bearing in mind the relationship between Saudi in being sports and all, or in ways that has affected your colleagues and stuff. And I totally get that and understand that. But for that 24 hours on Tyneside, it was a brilliant story. And it comes back to the point you made at the start about Jeff Shreves. You know, this patch just has the propensity to throw up the most brilliant stories. And as a journalist, selfishly, we've just had the greatest story in the world potentially land on our doorstep.
Whilst we're being honest with each other, Craig, two things. Once, I understand what you're saying about being a member of staff. I once tried to check into a Wetherspoons in Bridgend with one of the wedding guests, but that obviously didn't go very far, my request to take a room from her. But secondly, I also on that Wednesday got a call from a very good friend of mine at Sky, who I can't name, Craig David. Yeah. And it's actually David Craig.
David Craig, I think we got that, yeah.
who said, there's something happening. And of course, it was a whirlwind. Now listen, our only problem with Saudi Arabia is that for 4 years in this part of the world, they stole our output, Craig, you know. Yeah. And 400 of our colleagues lost jobs as a result. And it was a huge problem in this part of the world. But I repeat again, and I said it to Andy, and he will back me up on this. When the story first broke, and I said, oh, I wish it was anybody but Newcastle. Mm-hmm. The reason I said that was because here we were back in confrontation again, and I didn't want more confrontation. Yeah. It wasn't that I didn't wish for the Saudis to take over Newcastle.
No.
It's a fabulous football club. It's just wonderful football club.
Fed up getting battered by Newcastle. Well, that's right.
Yeah, over something that you know we were in the right about. But anyway, that is, I hope, in the past.
Yeah.
And I do wish the Toon well. It is a fantastic area, as we've been saying for some time. And it's a wonderful football club, and you know, so much and so many of my football memories.
Oh.
Goodness. Come from that period of time covering Newcastle.
Yeah.
It was wonderful.
I've spoken to you about this for different pieces down the years, haven't I? In terms of, you know, you've told me stories about going to Sir John's place down at Wynyard Row and Kevin Keegan being there.
Yes.
And, you know, all the decadence that involved and all the rest of it. And, you know, I know what you think of Newcastle. I also appreciate the motivation behind your argument for opposing the takeover. Of course I do. And as a journalist, I was in the middle of that, and I was hearing it from both sides in terms of even some of your colleagues at BN were very good in terms of outlining exactly what had gone on. So thankfully we're in a position now where that looks to have been resolved.
Absolutely.
To a degree.
Yeah, all bets are off. We're back where we were. Good luck to them.
If you can stop arguing with Newcastle fans,
by the way, that would help me as well, honestly, Craig. But listen, let me tell you, Craig, I've got a quick one about Newcastle. I mean, I love Newcastle fans. I love the area. It's what I would call a proper footballing area. I mean, it lives, eats, and breathes its football club. It's as simple as that.
Yeah.
You'll never go to another ground where you'll see more replica shirts on fans than at St James's Park. That's an absolute certainty. Mm. But I remember my first ever episode of what it was like at Newcastle when I was playing for Dundee United in an old thing called the Texaco Cup.
Mm.
And we and we drew Newcastle and we played them up at Tannadice and we beat them 2-0. And then we went down to St James's and I scored, I think, early on. So we're cruising here. I think we're cruising. Well, about half an hour to go, and there was only about maybe 15, 20,000 in the ground. So about 25 minutes to go, Craig, the crowd started getting excited and, oh, yeah. And I'm thinking, what the fuck's going on here? We're battering you here. What are you getting excited about?
Yeah.
And I turned to the touchline, and this mountain of a man came out the dugout. And he had it, and I thought, who the hell is that? And you know when you do a warm-up, it's sometimes a gentle thing. Well, this thing started doing 100-meter sprints up and down the touchline like an absolute express train. And I'm going, bloody hell. Then comes the shirt, comes off, and then I see it's Malcolm McDonald.
Yeah, yeah. Wow.
And it's he came on the pitch and he absolutely destroyed us in half an hour. And I thought, wow, if I'm going to play in England, I better get better.
But I think...
You mentioned Malcolm there. I saw Malcolm for the first time last week in the press box. He hasn't really been in since before COVID. And, you know, wow, Malcolm, you say that there. Malcolm was a superstar, wasn't he? He really was. He was, in terms of... My old man always says to me, you know, probably the best player he ever saw was Gascoigne or Beardsley.
Yeah, yeah.
But the most exciting he ever saw was Malcolm McDonald. He said he had that ability to electrify a stadium. And I've spent a little bit of time, I did an interview with him a few years ago, and just he can talk as well. Jesus.
he can.
What wonderful stories. I was quite happy to sit there for the 4 hours or whatever it was. Changed the batteries on my dictaphone a couple of times, but brilliant.
What a player.
Craig, thank you so much for spending your time with us today.
Hopefully we'll see you again.
Well, yes. Let's get it on when you're across. And do take my best wishes to to the North East and Newcastle specifically, if you will. I'm glad we've had this opportunity.
Well, the good news is the UK is back on Qatar's green list.
Yes.
So that's good.
Yes, hopefully sometime in the new year. Travel should be easy.
A week too late for me. But just to go back there, Andy said, you know, the small matter of the Texaco Cup, as if it was some irrelevant sort of thing, that was the last thing Newcastle won.
Oh, no.
Seriously.
No.
Was it that year? 73, 74, something like that?
No, Newcastle last won the Texaco Cup in 1975. And in terms of what we're trying to illustrate, how bad things have been here, that was the last thing they won.
Oh dear.
Oh dear. Leave it there and hope that situation is remedied double quick. Thanks again, Craig. Thanks, Craig. Really good.
Brilliant. Good to talk to you guys.
Thanks, bud. Cheers. Good stuff. And by the way, in my view, as good as and better than anybody else working that patch. And there are some good guys
in
that part of the world, but Craig is generally first.
Great footballing part of the country.
He's not very popular at different times, but that for me...
You all know what that feels like in the Northeast.
No, that for me is the benchmark of someone who is an operator.
Yeah.
That you are fearless and will go into places where people don't necessarily want you to be.
Yeah.
But Craig turns around some really good stuff up there. So thank you once again to Craig Hope. For spending time with us, and it will be good going forward, Andy, if we can show him around our manor.
Yeah, it'd be nice. The more of the boys that come out here and have a look, the better it will be, I think, for everyone concerned.
Yeah, ultimately. Let's hope that's very much the case.
Yeah, let's hope so.
There are times we don't necessarily help ourselves in this part of the world.
No, that's true. But we're learning.
We are learning. Get in touch via Twitter and Instagram. Thanks for listening, and we shall see you going forward.
Absolutely.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc. Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight.
and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.